Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome, everybody, into Millennial Sports Talk. Michelle Margot and Ben Verlander with you for NFL Draft Week. What an exciting time in quarantine.
Yes, we needed that. We needed that.
We really did. How's your week?
Good. You know, it started off exciting for me. I've been waiting for this Jordan Chicago Bulls documentary to come out for a while. So this past Sunday, I was locked in. Loved it, watched both episodes, and I am excited for this coming Sunday's two episodes as well.
So the name of that documentary is The Last Dance. I had put in my notes section on my iPhone, like, I have a list of things that I want to watch during quarantine.
Yeah.
I mean, I always have that list, but I just never get to it. And now I'm getting to them and crossing things off. It feels great. Sometimes I put things on there just so I can cross them off. It just feels good. Anyway, so I put The Last Dance on the notes, and I went back to look, like, I had finished Game of Thrones, no big deal, and I went, and I was like, oh, what am I going to watch next? And I was like, what's The Last Dance? And I was just, for some reason, I had this, like, romantic comedy in my head. I'm like, what's The Last Dance? And so I Googled it, and I was like, oh my gosh, so embarrassing.
You didn't want to put next to it in parentheses, like, Chicago Bulls or anything like that. Yeah, you just,
Anyway. Well,
so you finished Game of Thrones, you said?
I did. I wouldn't say it was like the most climactic ending.
Yeah, but welcome to the rest of the world's reaction when it happened.
Yeah, except I didn't have anyone to discuss it with. I just kind of like watched it and I was like, all right, that was the chapter in my life where I watched 8 straight seasons of Game of Thrones in a 5-week span.
All in all, fantastic show, but...
Yes. Yeah, yes. Hands down, fantastic. Like, I don't think a lot of things are going to measure up, but I wasn't thrilled. Anyway, this week, it is NFL draft week. And of course, there was a very interesting virtual draft that we experienced. And we have a very special guest on, Steve Weissman. He is an NFL Network and Tennis Channel host. So he'll be coming on in a little bit. But first, I thought we'd get to our GOAT moment of the week.
Sure. And our GOAT of the week this week, I wanted to choose Cesar Ruiz, who was the center for the University of Michigan Wolverines and was drafted on Thursday night. And if you were watching the draft, his story may stick out to you. As soon as he was drafted, they showed his room, and he was just overcome with emotion. And, you know, as a lot of guys are, it's an emotional, it's a cool time, but, he actually highlighted, and he's decided to play the rest of his career, he said, for his father, who passed away, quite a few years ago on the side of the highway, actually, got out of his car to go help somebody change a tire on their car, and somebody hit him and killed him. And, so ever since then, Cesar has, dedicated the rest of his football career to playing for his father, and always said he wanted to get drafted for him. And he did. And, you know, I don't want this to be a sad story. It was really, really cool to see him overcome with emotions and to finally have that I made it feeling. And I just thought it was really, really cool and kind of a sad but kind of a feel good story. So I, Michelle, am now a huge Cesar Ruiz fan.
Yeah, you'd be not human if you weren't now.
Yeah.
Always got to give the tear jerkers. No, that's cool, and I hope that he has a very prosperous, long, and successful career for that.
Yep. I need a Cesar Ruiz jersey.
Okay, well, I'll get you one for your birthday next year. What are your thoughts on how this all went, the virtual draft? So just fair warning, like, I did not expect it to go well.
Yeah, so actually, it's funny you say that. Going into it, like, even right before it, I tweeted out, this is going to be insanity. Like, I thought there were going to be all these, like, technical difficulties. And honestly, I thought they killed it. With the cards that they were given and that everyone has been dealt, and with the amount of people that they know are watching, I thought they did a really, really good job. Did you?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely knew what they were doing just from a television standpoint. I watched the NFL draft countdown, and it looked like a normal studio backdrop. Like, people, like, you know, when they have insiders on, it looked like that. I didn't see anything different. They definitely obviously had microphones, lavalier mics attached to guys' ties, and HD cameras. I mean, there were definitely people not working from home for this. I mean, saw, like, Roger Goodell was being, you know, dressed up or whatever by gentlemen in masks and gloves. Yeah. So they definitely did take some risk in this, which, I mean, you have to go on living your life, and I understand that. The main difference that I noticed from drafts in prior years was that, yeah, you're not getting to shake the commissioner's hand and give him a big bear hug when you walk across the stage and all that stuff, and that sucks. But later picks don't get that anyway.
Yeah.
Like, and same with, like, the MLB draft and stuff. Like, I don't, like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, but it's just, it's like, it's a tradition, you know, and that's the same with any draft. Like, the further along you go, for example, with the baseball draft, the first few picks, the first rounders are in usually the studio in Studio 42 at MLB Network, and, you know, they have a whole thing set up for them. But as the rounds go, you know, myself, I was drafted in the 14th round, and I was listening into the draft on a computer with my family, and we were all together. So, like, to your point, there's none of that later rounds. But with the first rounders, it's sort of a tradition with every sport. You know, I was actually this past year for the NBA draft, I happened to be there, and I got to see Zion drafted first overall. And, you know, I think about it, and 50 years from now, when we're looking back, that's going to be a video that, you know, is still shown. You know, it's a tradition, and it does kind of suck that couldn't happen, but I do get your point.
Yeah. Also, I feel bad because, and I don't want this to come across politically incorrect at all, but there's a lot of people all over America that don't have fancy homes. And I think it's not fair to those who don't feel comfortable having a camera in their home, you know, on draft night. Like, they don't have a choice this year.
Yeah.
And I didn't see anything like that. But I do wonder if there are kids from homes that don't really have. Does that make sense?
Like, no, I definitely get what you're saying. And you know, thinking back about it now, there were definitely some, you know, I saw some certain cameras that were, like, super zoomed in. So maybe if you aren't comfortable letting people in your house, you can just kind of have a camera right on the player himself.
Right.
So maybe there are ways around it, but I didn't think about. That is a good point. You know, you kind of didn't have an option. Maybe you don't want cameras allowed in your house, or the whole
world. Or if you're just ashamed, like, it's just, it takes people off an even playing field.
Not even a shame necessarily. It's just maybe, like, people are very judgmental. And
yes,
like
everyone,
like, from the first draft pick, Joe Burrow drafted first overall, the cameras are in his house. The first thing I texted in my group chat to my friends were, "Oh my God, the curtains in their house are atrocious."
Like, that says more about you than anything, Ben. Like, don't ever judge my curtains, all right? Yeah, I mean, I am personally quite judgy myself. And I say that because the next thing I'm going to say is going to sound so snobby.
Oh boy.
But I was not that impressed with Roger Goodell's basement. Like, you're the NFL commissioner.
Yeah, actually, I agree. I agree with you there. Like, have some cooler stuff.
Anything.
You know, like,
I think Bronxville, New York is where he lives. And, like, it's hard to get land, and it's hard to get space in the Northeast. I understand that. But, like, I was like, wait, that's Roger Goodell's basement? Listen, his basement is, like, bigger than my apartment, okay? So I really can't talk. But still, it just was not that impressive. M&M's looked impressive.
Yeah. Speaking of Goodell, I'm not sure if you noticed the outfit change that took place in the midst of the first round. Just, like, out of nowhere, came back for one pick and was talking to my roommates and said, "Did he just change? Could it have
been a sweat issue?
Why did he just change outfits?" I don't know, but, like,
Or was it planned?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, there could have been some sort of issue, but, like, I mean, come on.
Sounds like I've had to do that a couple times.
It was just a little strange, I thought.
Another thing that I noticed too was, so they spent 10 minutes after the pick was in.
Yeah.
Showing Joe Burrow, all like his path, his journey, whatever. And I'm like, okay, obviously he's going to go first overall, which Mel Kiper had him second best available, I think.
Mel Kiper did?
I think.
Oh, he had Chase Young first.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I mean, it's pretty obvious that Joe Burrow is going to get drafted first. And they obviously knew that. And then before they announced that the pick was in, Joe Burrow was holding a Cincinnati Bengals hat.
Yeah, well, actually,
like, before it totally took the excitement out of it.
Well, before the draft even started, Adam Schefter came on and basically said, as of Wednesday, the Bengals sent Joe Burrow and his family all Burrow number 9 jerseys and the hat to wear. So Schefter came on right before the draft and basically broke the news that he already knew. So I don't know. I mean, it wasn't really up.
Act excited, Joe.
Yeah.
Come on, Joseph. Step it up.
Speaking of acting excited, did you see Tua? Tua's family, I thought they looked like they just lost like their family pet. Like nobody.
I don't know, but those Lays though.
Nobody looked happy in that room. I kept waiting for like some sort of reaction and just never came.
This will be the last thing I say about this, but I think that Tua came to play with his outfit. He dressed up.
Yeah.
Compared to some guys.
Who do you think dressed up more, Tua or Henry Ruggs? Who was
it? It depends. Are we talking quarantine dress up or are we talking
if we're talking
dress?
Quarantine outfit, Henry Ruggs.
I know. He wore a robe. For those of you who didn't see, he wore a bathrobe. That was a legit bathrobe. That was not like a fake bathroom. That was
correct.
The kind that when you go to like a nice hotel and it's in the closet hanging up and you're like, this is way nicer than anything I own. So I'm going to wear it and act like I deserve to be in this room. I'm going to pretend like I got room service, even though it's just my leftovers. Yes.
Yeah. Legitimately a bathrobe he was wearing. I'm a fan. Whatever.
Anyway, well, Millennial Sports Talk is brought to you by a couple different sponsors. Our first one is Bet Online.
Yes, first sponsor, we have betonline.ag. And while we're all waiting this out at home, there's still fun to be had betting. You can go online to betonline.ag. There's no NBA, no NHL, no MLB. So you might think there's nothing really to bet on.
Just rub it in our faces, Ben.
I know, right? But
there are no live sports, everybody.
Look, I'm not taking this very well. But there are still things to bet on, like esports, American Idol, Big Brother, the election, the spelling bee. So there's still plenty. There's still fun to be had. So go online to betonline.ag and use promo code MYPOD100 to receive your welcome bonus. That's MYPOD100 to receive your welcome bonus.
And here's another quick word from another sponsor.
It's 2021. There are self-driving cars, plant burgers, and tourists in space. The least your phone could do is download entertainment in a flash. For that, you should get AT&T 5G. AT&T 5G is fast, reliable, secure, and nationwide. Want to make sure your phone service keeps up with what you need from it? Get AT&T 5G. It's not complicated. 5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See AT&T.com/5G for you for details.
All right. Well, without further ado, let's welcome in Steve Weissman. You've seen him all over ESPN, the Olympics. Now he's a host for NFL Network and the Tennis Channel. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Steve has been hosting Tennis Channel Live the past 5 weeks during this COVID situation, doing 3-hour live shows Monday through Friday, and of course doing some NFL draft coverage. But Steve, I have to say that the stuff I noticed the most is your workouts on Instagram. You get after it.
You have to, right? I mean, I think especially in this time where you can't do a lot of things and some stuff is out of our control, like you got to control the controllables. And one of those things is, you know, staying active and working out and kind of getting those endorphins going. And so, you know, thankfully enough, like I'm in California where the weather has been gorgeous. And so, you know, I've been able to get in some cardio circuits, some ab circuits, do some sprinting. And, you know, I miss my Soho yoga, the gym and, you know, playing a lot of tennis, but, you know, got to be able to get out there and stay active.
You have to keep you sane.
You guys are both making me feel like crap right now because I have not stepped foot outside other than one time in the past week. Wait, no, twice actually. I did get outside twice.
You got to do it. I mean, I miss the weights. Like, I don't have a gym set up at home, but you know, I got like one of those stretch bands. I've been using that, and I feel like I've done more push-ups during the last, you know, 2 months than I've ever done. So, you know, you got to do what you can do with what you have.
That's awesome. So one of the reasons we're having you on today, we talked about it a little earlier before you joined about just this NFL virtual draft and how we thought it went. We wanted someone who knew both the television aspect of the virtual draft and the NFL, the X's and O's of all that. And you're pretty much the perfect person for that. So what are your thoughts on how the draft went?
I thought it went great. I didn't know exactly, you know, what to expect, but I thought everybody handled it really well. I thought Roger Goodell was awesome. He looked so happy and relaxed and, you know, being able to interact with the fans through the monitor, you know, sitting on his chair and just everything about him was fantastic. It really added, I think, to the overall broadcast. And to be honest, like, getting to see everyone's house and family was more intimate behind the scenes access than we've ever had before. So I don't know how they're going to do it moving forward, but I like this better. You know, there weren't a ton of technical glitches. And you mentioned I've been doing these 3-hour live shows Monday through Friday on Tennis Channel. And so we didn't know what to expect heading into this. I mean, we started these shows in March because the tennis season was canceled right before the BNP Paribas Open at Indian Wells. And, you know, the leadership of Tennis Channel has been awesome, kind of, you know, keeping us on air and getting content for us to put on for 3 hours. And so I'm hosting kind of like Trey Wingo in studio, and I'm the only one there. There's nobody else there. And we have a skeleton staff. Ton of credit to all the folks behind the scenes because, you know, I've got two producers, I've got one director, you know, one stage manager, one camera person. So it's, you know, it's very sparse, and we're producing more content with less people really than we ever have. So it's a big undertaking. And so there's so much credit to the folks behind the scenes. And then I'm there kind of on an island, and I've got, you know, Lindsay Davenport and Paul Anacone and Tracy Austin and Chanda Rubin and Andy Roddick and all these folks on Skype, right? So if somebody goes out, and inevitably somebody's Wi-Fi somewhere is not going to be great, or, you know, somebody's going to and I had multiple interviews where people froze, and, you know, you just have to read and react basically. And you're like, all right, like, hopefully we get them back, yada, yada. just go to somebody else. And I remember, like, we had Nicholas Carrera and Shanda and Jim Courier on one time, and two of them went out. And so, like, obviously they, you know, I'm the one kind of constant where they know they can always put me on camera. And then Jim's like, well, I'm still here. And so, you know, you have those moments where it's just kind of wild, but you know, that's live TV. And
respect.
I thought they handled the draft really well. And also I learned early on, and you know, there was that moment where Trey just said a statement, and he's got seven people that are Skyping in. And if you don't specifically say a name, nobody's going to go, or they're all going to go. So I remember, you know, the first week of live shows we did, I learned quickly, like, I have to say, you know, Chanda or Tracy or Lindsay or
Paul, that's a good point.
You have to do that.
Yeah.
They don't have their own otherwise IFBs.
Exactly. Exactly.
I was just going to say, so Michelle and I were talking about it a little bit before, and even before the draft started, I didn't know how it was going to go and was a little worried that, you know, there'd be a lot of technical difficulties, and you know, there really wasn't. I thought they killed it, honestly. And you spoke to the fact that if you don't say somebody's name, you can have multiple people talking at one time. And I remember that happening one time. I was like, oh, there's like three people trying to talk right now. But honestly, there wasn't much of that. And all in all, I saw recently that there was 15.6 million viewers, and it just smashed like, it was awesome, man. I really think they did an incredible job.
And the other thing too,
they
is
did.
Even when there's live draft coverage, you know, from Vegas or wherever the city is, there's technical difficulties there too, you know? Like, it's not, I guess, immune to that happening even when it's when everyone's together. I would say the biggest flub was that Bill Belichick just turned into a dog.
But I thought that was great. Like, I absolutely love that. Awesome. That's so Belichick.
That is so Belichick. It's crazy.
And like, so Field Yates, you know, the ESPN reporter, is a buddy of mine. And so I've been in Nantucket with him a couple summers, and he lives like right next door to Belichick. And so I was like, I know that house and I know that room. And like, the fact that like, that was the setup and he had his dog there, which, you know, like Bill doesn't care. Like, he's like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And then he gives him a treat. I mean, like, I thought that part of it was cool. Like seeing Belichick in his element, which, by the way, like, Coach Belichick is a really funny guy. He's a very nice guy. Like, he's everything that you really don't see in his press conferences, which is the case with a lot of these folks. But and then seeing, you know, Cliff Kingsbury in his like house that looks, it was like it was modeled after Ryan Gosling's in Crazy Stupid Love. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he was like, his house, I'm like, all right, like, can I hang out with you? Like, and then you see Sean McVay's spot, and like, it was neat to see. And then you got Andy Reid, who's like in his Hawaiian shirt in the basement somewhere. So I love that, because you normally don't get that access. The only thing I thought personally I would have liked to had more of were the interviews. So if you have a camera set up in the draft pick's house, you know, like Susie Culver interviewed Joe Burrows, but like, why not every pick?
Yeah, that's the only thing. I was actually confused. I was waiting for the Burrow one, and then it wasn't happening. And then we finally got the interview. I was like, all right, well, that's what they're going to do with the first round guys. You know, they'll interview everybody, and they didn't. I was kind of shocked by that, actually.
Maybe they were just worried about microphone stuff, like just knowing that if there's no audio guy on hand or what. I don't know. Maybe there was. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you just roll with it, and like if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But like that, you know, everything else I think exceeded expectations. I just wanted to hear more from the, you know, from the draftees, like, all right, you know, whether it's generic or not, like sometimes you get a really special moment with those folks. And so that, you know, if they were to do this in the future, I think that would be my only thing that I'd like more of.
Yeah.
So aside from Cliff Kingsbury, Steve, who do you think had the best and worst war room?
So, I mean, you know, his setup and Sean McVay's were the best, but they're like the two young, cool, want to hang out with coaches, right? Like, they're just like, one's in Hollywood and the other one's in Arizona, and they've got these $1 million pads and they're just, you know, balling. And then I loved when the kids were involved, you know, like Matt Patricia had his son there the whole time. I think if you can get animals and kids involved in your live shots, like, it's a win. Like, a lot of my analysts on TC Live would like bring their pets in, and I'm like, Lindsay, who's that? And it's like, or like, Prakash, who's that? And it's like, they're dogs. And I think that, you know, that's fun and it adds to it. And then they would also sometimes bring their kids in, and like, who doesn't like a cute kid?
Yeah,
and,
you know, the relatability, likability factor. You're like, I don't care how your draft went, but the fact is I can relate to you and your family and your kids screaming. So this is great.
And it's like, oh, you're a nice human as well. So
what was the deal with Joe Judge's situation? It was like, just locked up in an attic.
I think, you know, everybody doesn't have like a nice office space perhaps, or maybe they don't want, like, I could see somebody being like, I don't want you to see my house.
Totally. True. We talked about that earlier.
So just keeping that like privacy aspect, like Belichick is like, this is like my little breakfast nook. Like,
you'll be able to see my kitchen table and that's all.
Right. Which was probably put, like, he probably went on Amazon, like, bought a table, like, just for this.
Yeah, no,
like, this is not my real table. Son going to the bathroom background.
Yes.
Now that we have the first few rounds done and in the books, who would you say jumps out in your mind as to so far having the best draft, do you think? Personally, I'm a Cowboys fan. Yeah, what team? I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm pretty satisfied with our draft. But I'm biased, so I want to get your opinion on who you think, which team has had the best draft so far.
You know, I think the Bengals did a good job, you know, getting Joe Burrow, picking up T. Higgins, the wide receiver. I mean, you look at their offense right now. You got Burrow at quarterback, who, by the way, I just read today, has been studying the playbook for weeks.
I saw that. You know, that's awesome. Like,
Yeah, like he's locked in. He is ready to go. He is all about being a Cincinnati Bengal who, you know, haven't won a playoff game in decades. You got Joe Mixon, Gio Bernard at running back, and then you're teaming up T. Higgins with A.J. Green, plus you got Drew Sample and Tyler Boyd. I mean, that offense looks pretty good. I think the Broncos set up Drew Lock really well, adding, you know, Jerry Jeudy. You got Noah Fant, K.J. Hamler now, Melvin Gordon, Philip Lindsay. So they, I think, did a good job. I'm a Redskins fan, so I love getting Chase Young. Because, you know, they thought about picking up Tua or a quarterback because, you know, Ron Rivera is the new coach there, and who knows whether they are all in on Dwayne Haskins or not. I say you got to give Haskins some more time, so I'm glad that they went with another defensive stud. So now they got four first-rounders on the defense, on the line, and I'm a big believer in building your line. You build the trenches. Like, that's where you win football games, whether it's the defensive line or the offensive line, both really. So defense wins championships, right? So now you've got this thick defensive line that whatever your offense does is kind of a bonus. Like, put some points on the board. We are going to stop everyone else and kind of go there. I mean, I was surprised by what the Eagles and Packers did, much like everybody else, getting those quarterbacks. You know, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm like,
yeah,
what's going on here?
Slap in, you know, the face.
give me some help.
With that said, which team do you think had the worst draft? That sounds harsh, but you know.
Draft. Yeah. I mean, you never know. Like, you're not going to know for 3 years, really, like who had the, because when it comes to the draft, you're just trying to add, like, you're not taking away, but right. Like, why did Green Bay take a quarterback and a running back with their first two picks when their best offensive players are at those positions?
I was just going to ask you about the Packers. One, why did they trade up to get him when they traded up in front of the Ravens, who don't need a quarterback, the Titans, who don't need a quarterback? Like, I'm confused as to what they were doing. You know, like, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm not happy, you know?
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, by the way, who still, in my opinion, is arguably the best quarterback in the NFL and has, I don't know, two to three more years at that level, maybe more, who knows. But, like, win now. I mean, this is not a league. Like, coaches don't get the leeway to lose for three seasons, right? Like, they're gone. And, like, you're bringing somebody else in. Same thing.
No matter your situation. Yeah, I agree. No matter the situation, really. Like, you can say you're bringing in a guy for a rebuild, but if he's still two seasons, you know, they're making a change. You know, it's not an age where you get much leeway at all.
And when they drafted Aaron Rodgers back in the day, Brett Favre was definitely contemplating retirement. Like, he had put that out there. Aaron Rodgers hasn't said anything about that. So I get, you know, Jordan Love has a lot of talent and you want to be able to win now as well as prepare for the future. And it is kind of that same situation age-wise with Favre and Rodgers, and now Rodgers with Love. But I say, you know, you got to give Rodgers more opportunities to win now, get him some of those targets at wide receiver. The running back made even less sense. I mean, you have Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams.
Yeah,
why are
true.
You taking A.J. Dillon? You know, that was befuddling to me. In terms of the Eagles,
great word.
I could see it maybe befuddling. A little more with Jalen Hurts. Just because, like, one, Carson Wentz has been injury prone a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, you want somebody in there that can step in. The backup quarterback is an underrated spot on the roster. And the success that Taysom Hill had in New Orleans, you know, like, and maybe Jalen can be sort of that guy. But we're not going to know for a couple of years kind of how these things pan out. So, you know, you get your guys at the top that you think are the surefire. Like, will Joe Burrow be that guy? I don't know, right? But you do the best you can. The one thing that stood out to me, everybody was like, oh, like, this draft is going to go so much differently because we didn't have all the access to, you know, bringing players in and doing all this scouting. And it pretty much went according to form with all these mock drafts. Like, there weren't a ton of surprises. And in my opinion, like, you're scouting based on what they did in college. So you've got a ton of film other than having an in-person interview, which I don't know how much that counts. or not. You know, like if somebody can actually sway you to not draft them or pick them higher just based on an in-person interview in the NFL. I mean, in my opinion, it's like, what can you do on the field? Not as much.
Yeah.
We've seen so many people with issues off the field.
Yeah, that's a huge problem, though, in why there's so many issues with guys in the NFL, and that's a whole nother topic. I think character is huge, and I think that MLB does a decent job, actually, with that, in my opinion, of the questionnaires and the in-person interviews and stuff.
You know, when my it's funny you say that, Michelle. When my brother
the Tiger screwed up with you, Ben, but I don't know.
when my brother was in high school and was potentially going to be a draft pick out of high school, the New York Mets actually came to Goochland, Virginia, and didn't come to our house to talk to my parents and talk to Justin. They went to our next door neighbor's house and went up to them and asked them if Justin was a partier and if he had tons of people over late night and if he always was drinking around the house and stuff like that. Crazy.
That is that. See, that's like, I don't know. I love stuff like that. You like, I'm also reading a book by Malcolm Gladwell right now called Talking to Strangers. And it's just about how, like, you can't assume about people just based on how they are face to face. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. And another potential can of worms that I want to open with you, Steve, is this could be a whole other topic, but what are your thoughts on draftees making so much money before proving themselves?
I'm fine with it. I mean, because they have proved themselves in what, 18 to 19 to 20 or whatever, 21 years of life. So there's a reason they're in this position. Like, they have worked their butts off. They have trained. They have put in those hard yards, and they have earned this opportunity. Yeah. And that's what our society is set up to do, right? So just because of the fact that they haven't done it at that level, I mean, you know, when you get a job in television, right, and it's like you're moving up in the TV landscape and hopefully making more money or whatever it may be, you're getting that contract based on what you've done, not what you're going to do. Well, they think what you're going to do, but they don't know yet. So
right. No, that's well said.
They absolutely have earned that. And right. I don't ever, like, when somebody gets a big payday, I am happy for them. And that's in all walks of life. I'm never like, oh, like, why couldn't I do that? Or, like, you know, it's like, no, that helps us all. Like, if you're getting paid more, like, that means I have the potential to get paid more.
Right.
So, So I think they've earned it. You know, you're not seeing lazy, untalented people getting paid, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I kind of think of it as, look at the, you know, most of the first round picks have all come from big colleges and have been very successful there. And, you know, look at, let's use Joe Burrow as an example. He played at LSU and at Ohio State, two programs that make so much money because of how successful they are. And he's the reason that LSU won the national championship and is going to make all this money. And he wasn't able to capitalize on any of that. Think of how much money he has brought to that, you know, program, and how much, you know, stardom he brought to that program, and wasn't able to cash in a single dollar on it. This is where he's finally able to look back and say, I did all of that in college. I won a national championship. This is why I'm drafted first overall. And this is why I'm getting the money that maybe I haven't yet proven myself in the NFL. But I have proven that you know, what I've done to this point in my life is worth this.
Oh, I agree.
Absolutely.
I guess the way that I was thinking about it was, I don't know how well you keep up with MLB, but like when Mark Appel got drafted and made, I think it was, I don't know, maybe $7 million, Ben, you might know better than I do. And
yeah, then right around that, actually.
He did not pan out at all. And he definitely had the potential to. It was just kind of like he got paid and, you know, that was that.
But you're always going to have situations like that, I think. You know?
I mean, there are people that succeed and people that don't. But I think, and this is a question for the two of you who are like so deep into the baseball world, but the fact that they have to wait to get that big payday, like, yeah, he may have gotten $7 million signing bonus just to sign, but that's it. Like, if he doesn't prove himself, like, yes, you could, like, $7 million, you're set up for life if you take care of it the right way. But you don't get those Trout deals, you know, and stuff like that until years later, where there are other sports, in my opinion, where you're getting paid a lot more at the start. And I think, I don't know, Ben, what you think about, like, the fact that you have to wait to get those $100 million deals in baseball.
Yeah, you know, and that kind of goes back to the point that you were making earlier, is you can you can put in the work your whole life through 18, 19, 20 years of life and get a good signing bonus out of college or out of high school in baseball. But until you prove yourself on the field, you're not going to make that super life-changing money. And I'm not saying $7 million isn't life-changing money, but that's kind of an outlier first overall pick sort of thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of what you're talking about, you have to put in the work to then make, you know, 7 years down the line, then be able to make hundreds of millions of dollars, you know?
I would also say this, because baseball, generally speaking, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're not going straight to the majors. Like, you're spending time on multiple levels of, you know, minor league ball before you hit the show. I mean, there are definitely people that come up right away, but that's more of a rarity. Whereas in
there's
the NFL,
nobody anymore. There's nobody that comes
right. So you in the NFL though, you are getting drafted to play. Like you better start week one. If we're spending a first round pick on you, like that's value.
That's
whereas
a great
baseball
point.
Is more of we're planning for the future. NBA, like you better be an all-star this year, right?
Yeah.
so it's a little different in that respect as well, where, you know, there's not that time to kind of get groomed like Major League Baseball. But, you know, and I can like draw from tennis where it is like a complete meritocracy where, you know, your success is based on how you do, you know, like nobody is paying you unless you win. And that's been a big issue.
Sorry, I was just Googling the word you just used.
Dude, you're just, Steve's just dropping the dictionary on us in Millennial Sports Talk this week.
I'm an elder millennial.
Steve's like, no, you guys are just idiots.
No, I mean, meritocracy is quite the word. That one, yeah, we're like, not idiots.
But no, it's basically what it means is that your success is based on how you perform year to year. So you could be number one in the world, but that ranking goes away unless you win those tournaments the next year.
That's crazy.
You know, those points drop off. So, you know, you have to continue to win. And it's been a big issue right now with COVID-19, the fact that a lot of these players, you know, other than the one thing in tennis is like, so you get, you know, your Federers, your Nadals, your Djokovic's that have made $100 million, right? And over that, they've made, you know, tens of millions more in endorsements.
Right.
But then you get to like the 50th ranked player in the world and they're not making any of that. So there's a big drop off and there's been talks about how do we help financially, you know, players ranked 150 to 500 or so on and so forth on both tours. Because there's such a disparity between the superstars at the top and everybody else, those everybody else's are making money based on winning. And if you can't play tournaments, you can't win, and therefore nothing is coming in. It's not a contract like you have in the NFL, in the NBA, MLB, stuff like that.
I think you make really, really great points, Steve.
The other thing in the NFL that I'm empathetic to is the fact that these players don't have guaranteed contracts. So whatever they're getting off the top, that is all that's guaranteed. They could get injured tomorrow and that team can cut them and literally not care about them anymore. You know, in the NBA, they're getting paid whether they ride the bench or play. In baseball, they're getting paid whether they never, you know, step another foot on the field.
Yeah,
in the NFL, it is not, in my opinion, fair, right? They are only getting what's guaranteed on that contract. So I say get the most that you can because you never know. Whereas literally we've seen these balloon payments in the NBA where some dude hasn't played in 2 years and he's getting $20 million that year and it's just guaranteed and it's coming in, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us this week. We really appreciate it. But that is it for Millennial Sports Talk this week. Be sure to download and subscribe on your usual podcast distributor, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, Steve, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having me.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.